In nature, a wildfire is one of the most devastating natural forces. It burns hot and fast and leaves little behind but ash and char. Or so it seems. Very soon after the fire passes through the forest, life returns. Shrubs and weeds that clog the forest floor have burned away, leaving space for new trees, grasses, and flowers to emerge and flourish. Habitats are created, bringing new insects, birds, reptiles, and mammals. A cancer diagnosis can feel like a wildfire, our bodies becoming this new, fire-clarified landscape. For some, cancer changes utterly everything. For others, cancer brings greater clarity and purpose. And some of us are still searching for what life after a cancer diagnosis will look like. Welcome to The Burn. We are exploring stories of life and transformation following a breast cancer diagnosis. I'm April Stearns, the founder and editor of Wildfire Magazine and the host of this podcast. Today, we're going to hear a piece about a topic that doesn't get as much airtime as it should. Today, as I record this episode, I am acknowledging my 12th cancerversary, 12 years since my diagnosis on March 12th, 2012. It's a lot of 12s. And this year, I find myself reflecting on the aspects of having had cancer and gone through treatment that still affect me. This is true for nearly everyone I've met in Cancerland. Cancer doesn't stop when treatment ends or when no evidence of active disease is found, also known as NED or NEAD. The hard truth of cancer is that the mental and physical effects often last much longer than the initial phases of diagnosis and treatment. And that's the case for my storyteller today. As you'll soon hear, she's been dealing with the effects of lymphedema. When I was diagnosed, I asked about lymphedema prevention and was more or less told that we'd focus on that if/when I developed it, but to be always vigilant because there was no statute of limitations on when it could develop. It was a weird mix of wait and see combined with always be vigilant. But what did that even mean? And what would we do after it developed? We'll get into all of that today. My guest today is Jacqueline Chung. Jacqueline is a licensed marriage and family therapist. She was diagnosed at 33 with stage 2 triple positive cancer that was also BRCA2 positive. Jacqueline lives in San Diego with her husband, James, dog Barnabas, and twins, Atticus and Eleonora, who were born via IVF after cancer treatment. Jacqueline enjoys her work helping others heal from trauma and have more connected relationships in her work as a therapist. She too continues to heal. In her free time, she writes, skis, dances, and walks. Most of her time now is spent chasing toddlers around the house, changing diapers, and discovering the world again through their eyes. Hey, Jacqueline, nice to see you.
Nice to see you too, April.
I'm so glad we get to dig into this today. So we're kind of going back in time with this particular story of yours. This was published in our 2021 Grief and Acceptance issue. Your story is called The Aftermath and Facing Lymphedema. So after you read, we will chat. Those of you listening, stay tuned to the very end for a writing prompt inspired by today's episode. All right, Jacqueline, I'll let you take it away.
Thanks, April. The aftermath, facing lymphedema. It's my second consult of the week. I've just gotten another crash course in a disease, a bodily malfunction that I didn't want to know about. I didn't want to have to learn. Lymphedema. The doctor is a microsurgeon. Oh, it's already stage 2, he says, pushing the skin of my elbow into a crater with his thumb. The edema staying as he pulls away. How could it be stage 2, I think. I've done everything right. I avoided the hot tubs, kept the skin moisturized. At the first sign of tingling, I book an occupational therapist. Week after week I go. Keep measuring me, I insisted, even when the measurements stayed the same. When my arm continued to swell, when it wasn't going down, I made her wrap me up with bandages. I kept it wrapped long after the 24-hour period necessary for days when I could barely type my notes for work because of the restriction. I didn't want to see my arm expanding if it really was. I rationalized to myself that if I was diligent, it would go away. Well, surgeries only work about 20% of the time, he says matter-of-factly. My face becomes hot red. I feel the sweat pour into my armpits. I look up at his surgical mask, avoiding eye contact, feeling my own eyes become wide. "Well, I might as well cut my arm off if I have to live with this," I say through tight teeth. I slam my hands down on the butcher paper. This chair is the spot of all the bad and good news, where I'm poked and touched. The only decision every time is gown open to the front or back. Different day, different office, same chair. "You don't want to do that," he swiftly replies, not indulging my protest. "Compression is the most effective form of managing lymphedema," he says. That word. He attaches it to me, the way this malfunctioning arm is attached to my body. Another disease on my record, another problem to manage. Just a week prior, I heard my cardiologist call the reoccurring pericarditis I had a disease. No, thank you. The rest of the conversation is a blur. I already know I'm never coming back here, but I take the brochure from the case manager anyway. A woman named Linda Ann stares back at me from the page. Certified lymphedema massage therapist is written under her name. This is the second time I've been given her information. The first time was from my couples therapist who happens to have graduated with my husband in New York, we find out. Linda Ann is her mother-in-law. Okay, I'll call her, I think. It's the day before Thanksgiving and my husband and I are going to get on the road to San Francisco. It's supposed to be a reprieve from the monotony of being stuck inside the last 8 months like everyone else. It's a perfect San Diego day, sunny, blue, 78 degrees, but I'm dissociated, swirling around in my loud head. I'm driving so fast around the driveway into my garage that I scrape my car against the fence as I turn. I see the look on my neighbors' faces as I go, hands to their cheeks, as if to say, "Oh no." I keep going even as the fence shakes. I need to get out of the car. I swing open the door, throw my purse onto the countertop, dismiss my dog's greeting. I fall face first into the couch. It comes flooding out of me. I finally say the words in my mind and then out loud to James, "I have lymphedema." The drive north to San Francisco is mostly silent. I want to be empty, my mind blank, my arm drained of this stagnant fluid, the weight gained with steroids and menopause to disappear right here in this car seat. If I could strip off my clothes, peel back the skin, remove body parts for a little while, I'd do that too, unburdened. But only my stomach is empty. I've forgotten to eat, my insides nauseated and ready to purge, no room for anything else. My face is mostly to the passenger window those 8 hours. The beige earth sweeps by like a constant brush stroke. It's back to that same feeling, the feeling I had when they told me I had cancer, the feeling I had when I realized I might not get to have a baby, sinking. The impossibility of the news, the impossibility of a future beyond this one moment. I glance down at my arm, now garmented in black. I'm starting to get used to seeing no skin. I glance back up at the sky, blue, white, then white peach, then peach pink. It becomes a magenta purple backdrop against the Santa Ana Mountains. My chest suddenly stings. I feel ashamed for being ungrateful. I look back down at the betraying arm. When will this ever end, I think? How am I supposed to get to acceptance in my cancer story if there's always something? How am I supposed to live with a fat arm, the constant wrapping, never a next step? The tears come just as the sky turns to blue-black. "It's going to be okay, Jack," James says to me. "No, it's not," I think, but don't say. The nausea lasts through the weekend into the next week. I'm stuck. Then, a few weeks later, I set up the microsurgery with the right doctor. He's going to perform a lymphatic venous anastomosis. Hope. When I arrive there at the hospital, I don't even mind that there's an extra appointment I didn't need to attend. I welcome the painful IV. The surprise overnight stay after it's done barely bothers me. I actually look forward to the anesthesia. I gladly offer my arm. cut me open, reattach the lymphatic vessel to my vein. We're doing something about this. 2 days later, when I'm still recovering and wrapping, scraping blue ink with alcohol swabs from my arm where they marked me up, I attend a young breast cancer support group. The moderator asks for my update. "Well," I say, my voice cracking, "I just had the surgery. The fluid seems to be going down a little." Suddenly, water spills from my freshly washed face out of my eyes. I didn't know I needed this. I needed them. There they are, those faces staring back at me in little boxes, some familiar, some new, some whose laughter and energy anchored me to those first few weeks of chemo, my first time at the group, reluctantly. I see short hair, bald heads, new color. I didn't know them with the long hair. I don't need to know what they do for a living or where they're from originally. I just want to know their names. I want to know their stories. "It's so much," I say next. Their heads start bobbing in a yes motion. They get it. The unexplainable, agonizing thoughts that go through my head. No need for the timeline. They understand the energy spent on phone calls for appointments, the ritual of a medication breakfast, new aches, the dread of something off in my body. When I let out a sigh, I know that they're familiar with the inexorable new normal we never wanted. There's commotion in someone's background. Someone's kids are crying. Someone's dog needs walking. Someone's putting off tidying up the house. It's Saturday morning. A woman starts relating to my feelings, picks up where I stop. I can look on. I wrap the bandages around my bare arm, vulnerable. The only time I can be certain no one will need me to explain what's wrong. Sun shines out. There's a whole day of possibility. And all I want is to be here with them. They keep telling their stories. One vents and the other gets it. Connection and empathy bounces around the electronic room. I feel myself soften. I touch my arm and notice its softness. I feel the space inside my core. The rhythm of my breathing is steady. I realize that the end of grief may not be near, that every time a side effect from the necessary treatment comes, I'm back in the cancer. I want to be at the end. I'm ready to be inspirational. I'm ready to blend in with the women my age without the cancer diagnoses and have something to say. But I've not gone back. I've just been mirrored. Someone gets me. Suddenly, there's the faces of the women I know. They are my reprieve, my acceptance. I'm now not alone.
Oh, that was beautiful, Jacqueline. Thank you so much for reading. It was so nice to revisit this story with you. So thank you.
Yeah, it was for me too.
I'm glad. Well, I can't wait to dig into it with you. We are going to take a quick break here, let you catch your breath. And when we come back, we'll get into it. Hey, this is April. Every week here on The Burn, I say there is no place on the planet like a wildfire writing workshop. And I want you to know that I mean that. I mean it from the deepest part of my core. And that's because there is no place where young people with breast cancer gather together and bear themselves on the page and then share it. Again and again, people tell me that they didn't even know how much they needed the writing workshop and the writing prompts until they came and they wrote. So have you dreamed about writing your own essay to submit to Wildfire? Maybe you have a piece of your cancer story that you want to share, but you need help getting started with it. Or maybe you just need time to be accountable, to show up weekly for yourself and for others in a community. Sign up for our Sparks class. You'll find it to be the safe place that you need to get your ideas sparking for your next essay, your next poem, or maybe just to do the healing that you need to do. Head to wildfirecommunity.org/workshops to sign up for the next one. I can't wait to write with you.
Hi, my name is Nikki McCoy. I live in Olympia, Washington, and I was diagnosed with stage 3A breast cancer at age 39 in 2021. I also carry the BRCA1 gene mutation. I recently attended a Wildfire Magazine pop-up writing workshop for the young breast cancer community. April has a gentle way of setting the tone, pulling out stories with meaningful prompts, and creating a safe space to explore and share our writing. Thank you, April, and thank you to the wildfire community.
Thank you so much for the love, Nikki. I really appreciated your testimonial. Thank you for that. And now turning back to you, Jacqueline, thank you again for this powerful lymphedema story. I said at the top before you started reading that we first published this back in 2021. So I'd love to start with an update if you have one for us.
Yeah, an update about my life, an update where I am with my treatments.
Any and all. I guess I was specifically asking about like the lymphedema aspect, but I know it all kind of bleeds together, right?
Yeah. So actually reading this again, I had had that microsurgery with a doctor here in San Diego. And it was pretty good. Afterwards, it did help a little bit, but I was interested in pursuing more treatment, even though, again, lymphedema is lifelong incurable at the moment. And so I got to know Linda Ann, the lymphedema therapist. She's been such a wonderful healer in my life, and I see her regularly for massage therapy. And then I got connected with Dr. Wei Chin, who's at the Cleveland Clinic. So I highly recommend this surgeon. And I recently had his liposuction surgery in October. So it was like debulking, and it was really great. I'm still kind of healing from that. And then I'm hoping to get more surgeries in the future. I still have lymphedema in my right arm. The surgery helped to reduce the fat there. But I do wear tight compression daily and at night. So it's just part of my life now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel like listening to your talk now, it feels a little lighter than where you were when you were writing the story. And there was a line that you said in your piece that really struck me, which was around like, how do you find acceptance when things keep changing or new things keep cropping up? And I'm kind of wondering where you're at with acceptance these days.
Yeah. Something I was thinking about actually today on my walk with my dog, I think grief just takes time. And being a young cancer survivor, you're still young. You kind of expect things to move along because, I mean, just our culture and just being young and it just takes a long time. I mean, I think I'm still in the healing process. I had cancer in 2019 and I just still feel like I'm in that process to getting to acceptance. And I think it's constantly evolving, dipping in and out of the different stages of grief. If you think about that, it's not linear. So acceptance mm-hmm. comes and goes. Sometimes I'm not in acceptance. I'm back to anger and I'm back to resistance and denial even. So I just think that there's not like, you reach acceptance and then there's where you are. But I think getting comfortable with that and realizing that it's okay that this process is slow, that's the acceptance I'm at now. And then, possibility, having people around you to mirror your experience, being in, groups like wildfire writing groups really helps to make you not feel alone. And that's really all I can say about acceptance, because I think it's hard. It's really hard to get to acceptance, especially when things constantly change and, we're dealing with side effects that are ongoing.
Yeah. I think now, one of the things about having been in cancer land, I guess, for the last 12 years, one of the things that I really learned is that acceptance is a moving target. And sometimes I do have acceptance around certain things. And then it's almost like, I think, climbing a really high mountain like Everest or something, where these are various like base camps where you reach there, you acclimate, and then maybe climb some more. And I think that's been a theme maybe in my own survivorship is, I reach these different levels of healing, sometimes going backward, sometimes going forward, but I reach a new level, I acclimate to it,
And then things get uncomfortable again, or I figure out that I need something else. And yeah, it's like acceptance isn't just a finish line or something. It's a process that we have to come to again and again and again, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's layered, because there's things that come up that, you know, yeah, it's not linear. You're right. Okay. I like the moving target.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's really helped me, and it sounds like, you know, from your piece and what you just said really has helped you, is just finding the other people. In just that strong feeling of not being alone is so, it's so transformative, I think, in terms of giving back a little hope. Even if, like, I don't know, it might feel a little sad to look around and be like, why are there so many people dealing with this too? But it is devastating to feel like the whole world is moving on and you're stuck in this one place.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is. And I still go back to that place sometimes, you know, I still go back to feeling like alone, and it's like this back and forth of like alone and wanting to connect with people that get it. And then also just wanting to be with people who don't get it, because you want to just it not to define you.
Right.
So it's constantly changing. But finding what you need when you need it is really helpful to moving forward.
Oh, absolutely. So you have twins now. You have these beautiful children. And I'm anxious to hear a little more about that, because you just submitted a story that we're going to publish in the family issue. And little like shout out to the fact that I do publish people more than once. I think people sometimes don't realize that. But if you've been listening to The Burn for a while, you know I have repeat guests on. So Jacqueline, you just submitted to the family issue. And I think part of the segue I want to make here is I want to ask you how your lymphedema was affected by your pregnancy. Are there things about that that people maybe don't know?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I was surprised by myself in the essay when I said, you know, will I have a baby? Well, I did. Mm-hmm. And I had twins. It was amazing. It's a huge miracle, blessing. I mean, I feel incredibly grateful for that. Yeah, there was so many concerns, you know, when you have cancer and it's estrogen positive, you're high risk because you're over 35. I mean, there's a lot of things here. And lymphedema was one of them. I knew going into pregnancy that there was a chance that the lymphedema could get worse, meaning that there would be more fluid, there would be more edema. And then I would have to work, you know, after giving birth, have to go back to tend to that. But it was worth it to be able to have the babies and be pregnant. And actually, my lymphedema was okay. There weren't major flare-ups than what I'd already experienced. And I think, you know, there's things that you can do, you know, as best as you can to take care of your body during the pregnancy. But that was a risk I was willing to take. And luckily, it wasn't too much of a concern. There were other concerns besides the lymphedema, but it is something that can happen for people with lymphedema, especially lower extremity lymphedema.
It's just so great to have stories like yours where, you know, for other people listening, because I think that, first of all, lymphedema isn't talked about nearly enough, but also, you know, this idea of life kind of moving on in some form, it may not look like what we think when we're diagnosed with cancer and we think, okay, I'll just like do a little treatment and I'll be back to normal, is what, you know, we of course all think. And then to realize it's not, you go through this period of total devastation where it feels like, okay, will nothing be what I had hoped or planned? But then to have stories like yours where it's like a mix, you know, of like this really awesome thing, you were able to grow your family, you've got these children now, and this other thing that you're also dealing with, like you're holding them both in your hands. And I think that's one of the challenges, is how do we hold reality and hope at the same time? And I think from here, at least, it seems like you're doing it, even if it doesn't feel like it every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, what just came up for me is actually World Lymphedema Day was last Wednesday, March 6th.
Yes.
And I didn't even realize how prevalent it was, because it's not talked about a lot. So there are a lot of people that are dealing with it. But going back to what you just said, yeah, I mean, isn't that life? Like, isn't it life that we are holding both, you know, tremendous joy and tremendous pain? That's what it is. And so my life is just a microcosm of what's happening in the world. And there's a lot to be grateful for. But it is hard. And I think realizing that it is both. Yeah, that's what it is. That's what it is, you know?
It's like another layer of that acceptance, or that, you know, finding a bit of acceptance. So I know that you have been a writer off and on throughout your life, and you use writing to process the big stuff, as I do. What role is writing playing in your survivorship these days?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, I got on with Wildfire when the pandemic started, I think in 2020 in the summer. And that's really been the biggest place that I've spent my time using writing for healing. So, I mean, you know, kudos to your project. You're bringing us all together to do this, because that's where it happens. Otherwise, you know, this past 2 years has been focused on babies and raising them. But writing is really healing. And there's so many first drafts of, you know, things that I just needed to get out. And those, they may not become stories. Some of them could, but it is incredibly healing just to have it out there, and have it out of my head and onto the paper. And I do find myself, you know, sometimes writing freely on my own, in between work and taking care of the babies, but especially in your groups, because your topics are so good and thought-provoking and helpful to the healing process.
Oh, thanks for that. I'm so glad to hear that. Okay, so last question. You know, we started this by talking about lymphedema, and that might still be the answer to this question. But I'm just curious, you know, as you continue to move through your survivorship, and as we kind of talked about this idea of maybe there being like levels where you acclimate and then new things happen, what would you say is your biggest challenge in survivorship these days, if you have one?
My biggest challenge in survivorship, honestly, it's not, you know, it's not for me right now, thinking too much about the future, about what could happen if cancer could come back or anything like that. But it's the menopausal stuff. It's because I have BRCA too, also the decisions I need to make soon about, you know, removing my ovaries and tubes, and there's constant doctor's appointments around that. I think that, yeah, the biggest challenge lately has been menopause and just the symptoms that come with that, and getting to acceptance about that. I think I'm in this kind of like workshop right now of going through the stages of grief about kind of denial and protest, resistance to, you know, me being in menopause permanently. So that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah. And I feel like there's echoes of your essay, even in that, you know, feeling sometimes stuck, I think is the hardest part. And I can really relate to that, and others can too, with this unexpected medical menopause. So yeah, thanks for voicing that, and good luck with this next step, these next stages with the BRCA decisions that you need to make too.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. Well, Jacqueline, I know how much you enjoy community and you like to connect with others. Do you want to share where people can find you online?
Yeah, I mean, I have my own website, but it's my therapy website. So it's JacquelineChung.com. I'm on Instagram, Jacqueline_Chung_. It is a private account, but I will certainly accept your friend request if you're in the breast cancer community. I love making new friends, especially writing friends. And otherwise, you know, I'm not online too much. So I hope to see people in the writing groups. That's a good place.
Yes, absolutely. And it's not like you aren't busy. So we totally understand, but we'll link to you so people can find you.
Thank you.
Well, Jacqueline, thank you so much for being here and reading your story and just sharing where you're at these days with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for being willing to talk about lymphedema and having me on. I feel super grateful.
Absolutely. Well, I hope you guys will pick up the 2021 Grief and Acceptance issue where you can read Jacqueline's story. She also has some images in that issue. And like I said, Jacqueline will be again in our family issue. So Jacqueline, we'll have to have you back and you can read your new chapter with us then.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, you guys, I'm April Stearns, and you've been listening to The Burn. The Burn's a production of Wildfire Magazine, where we share breast cancer stories from young people like you've never read or heard before. We also strive to inspire you to write your story like you've never written it before. Stay to the end for a writing prompt inspired by today's episode. Our producer is Bill Smith of Shoe Production, and our production assistant is Monica Haro. If you want more on the life-changing transformation to be had from telling your breast cancer stories, please visit us at wildfirecommunity.org. You'll find a copy of the issue shared in today's episode. You'll find all of our archives there, and you can take a writing workshop with me. There's no place on the planet like a wildfire writing workshop, and I want you to experience it for yourself. Discover how to write your way back to yourself, write your way to reclaiming your body and your story. And don't forget to subscribe to The Burn and listen to it wherever you go. Okay, here's your writing prompt. I ripped this right from our discussion and from Jacqueline's essay. So set your timer for 8 minutes, write without stopping or editing. The question is, how am I supposed to get to acceptance in my cancer story when there's always something new? How am I supposed to get to acceptance in my cancer story when there's always something new? Write on that for 8 minutes, write without stopping, see what needs to come out and where it will take you. And if you find that you write best with a good writing prompt, head to wildfirecommunity.org/free, where I've got tons of writing prompts for you. All right, happy writing. Thanks for listening. Until next time, take good care.